EY today.
Welcome to America Tonight. This is Kate Delaney, coast to coast, and all those flyover states and the nooks and crannies that I've probably lived in this amazing country. The buzz is out there, and the buzz is headed in a couple of different directions. Usually we would be pounding what's going on in Afghanistan and that the troop drawdown is starting to begin slowly, and certainly there are many other things worth diving deep into and really scraping to get to the bottom of some of the things that just infuriate all of us, including the get-to-the-black race that is happening in Washington, D.C. And you know what I mean by that, right? Getting us into the black. When are they going to get serious about that? Although I feel like I'm beating the drum over and over and over again. Ever since I jumped on the airwaves, we have been, especially for this show, America Tonight, we have not been able to get to that magical area where we can say we're out of the red and we're in to the black, even just to get close. So, Thursday is a very big day for one Casey Anthony. Why? Because she will find out whether or not she's going to do any kind of time for lying to the cops, basically, in a nutshell. She was convicted of that. People forget that she was acquitted of all the serious charges when it came to the murder of her 2-year-old daughter back in 2008. The one thing that was left over was the lying conviction, if you will. Allow me to take that shortcut. Basically, that's what's going to happen. Will she end up doing any time, or because of the time she already served, is that enough, and does she get the get-out-of-jail card and leave? And I think what's going to happen is she's done. That's it. I can't imagine. After this acquittal on the serious stuff, I don't think that she's going to end up doing any kind of time. Also on Thursday, big meeting with the president when it comes to cuts and when it comes to decisions on raising revenue. Because remember, the Democrats are saying, well, we got to raise fees, we got to get out there, got to get that money back in, close up some of those loopholes. While the Republicans, because pretty much this is the way it is, you're on one team or you're on the other. This is why I always push for that third party that may eventually happen in the future, in the next 10 years or so. But with the debt ceiling looming, with no room to breathe on this, the president is not ruling out using a constitutional argument to increase how much money our government can end up borrowing. So the debt talks move on. The president and the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, supposedly talked over the weekend, although they won't confirm the discussion. They won't talk about anything that happened at the White House at all. So they're done with that. They're not going to do that. Instead, now we move on to other meetings, and perhaps there will be some word on, I don't know, negotiations, if you will, compromises. Those are words we've been hearing a lot. Compromising. Because at this point, remember, the debt ceiling, if you don't raise the debt ceiling, August 2nd is supposedly when we default. That's what the Treasury Department is saying. And a lot of economists are saying it's potentially catastrophic, the repercussions, if the ceiling isn't raised. One of the things that would happen is skyrocketing beyond belief interest rates, and of course the dollar would continue to get weaker. And I think, frankly, we're just sick of all of this. Are we going to have these deep spending cuts? Are we avoiding tax increases? Why is it that the little guy, the middle guy, maybe you just have your head above water and you're doing okay, But you're right there on the ledge where taxes soaring up a little bit in your bracket will kill you. You know, keep hearing this word that gets thrown around, wealthy, wealthy. Well, what is wealthy? Define wealthy. Earlier this week, Mitch McConnell, the Senate Minority Leader, said to the Democrats, or said of the Democrats, look, they just want to increase spending to solve this problem. That's it. And we're not going to give on our end on these tax increases. Now, McConnell has been invited to have more of a conversation with the president and did so already, too. And now they're talking, now the Republicans are talking about the possibility of tax increases. And then you have the Senate Minority Whip, John Kyle, Republican from Arizona, and he actually jumped in with McConnell on this one just last week and said that, you know, the White House, might not have said yo, but he said the White House and the Democrats are insisting on job-killing tax hikes and new spending, and that's just not going to address what we're going through, our job crisis or any of this, our fiscal crisis. And a bill with new spending and higher taxes would fail with bipartisan opposition. Now it seems like that has changed a little bit. Sounds like there might be a bipartisan agreement. We never, by the way, never in our history, just so you know this, I double-checked, triple-checked, and quadruple-checked. That's enough, right? We never have defaulted on our so-called mortgage. So what happens with the credit rating, and how much does that matter? How much would we really suffer? How much of it is conversation, and how much of it is fact? I mean, the facts that we all know is not enough Americans are back to work, and those that are not in the positions where they're making a living. There are so many people that are underemployed, but they're considered employed, so they don't count. And the number, when we're in the 9 range, I don't think is accurate. Not by the conversations I've had with people. I think we're over 10%. So there's no question, jobs, jobs, job. The economy, what's in your wallet, is so huge to so many people because why? How can you thrive if you can't survive? How can your kids thrive if you can't get them to the next level, if you can't help them get there? It used to be that if you just couldn't, you were a decent student, maybe even a decent athlete, you could still find a way to get into college if you didn't get the full ride scholarship. Whew. Now, I can't even look at these. In fact, we'll do a show on this. We'll do a couple segments on this. And looking at what it costs to send somebody to college. And even if they're helping, good kid, mowing lawns, doing everything they have to do, how much do they need? You know, it's like that commercial. What's your number? What's your number when you're 18 years old just to get an education? A lot of things are backfiring. A lot of things aren't working. Thursday, a big, big day in Washington and in Orlando and around this great nation. Coming up, much more, including a look back from a lawyer's point of view on the Casey Anthony verdict. Hang with us.
If you're concerned about radiation poisoning from Japan in the air, water, or food and can't find potassium iodide, go to RestoreYourHealthNow.com and choose Liquid Zeolite. Liquid Zeolite is hands down the best product to remove radiation from your body and safely removes toxins, heavy metals, boosts energy levels, and promotes a strong immune system. For fatigue, muscle weakness, headaches, memory loss, influenza, joint pain, or toxic radiation poisoning, use Liquid Zeolite from RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Liquid Zeolite is so powerful it was used to clean up contamination in Chernobyl, yet so gentle you won't even know you're taking it. Liquid Zeolite comes with a money-back guarantee, but is only available at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Learn how to get free bottles of liquid zeolite at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. That's RestoreYourHealthNow.com or call 800-880-9976. Call 800-880-9976 today and learn how to get free bottles of liquid zeolite.
As many people know, ever since President Nixon took us off the gold standard, the U.S. dollar has been devaluating. What people don't know, however, is how this directly affects your personal finances. Is there a way to protect your portfolios from losing value? The answer to all of this is gold and silver. They both have maintained their purchasing power for 6,000 years. If you had $100,000 in cash and $100,000 in gold and silver back in 1913 and kept them until now, your cash would have the buying power of only $4,800. But your gold and silver would have the buying power of $3 million. The answer to protecting your assets is simple. Call John Ballman today at 1-800-686-2237, extension 169. Get all your questions answered before your money is worth a zero. Call 1-800-686-2237, extension 169. Take action today while we still accept paper dollars for gold. That's 1-800-686-2237, extension 169.
Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. But it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America. And he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier. And I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com. Plenty of reaction here on America Tonight to the Casey Anthony verdict, the fact that she was acquitted, and now it's just a matter of what happens with those charges she was convicted of as far as the police are concerned, and lying to law enforcement is the four that she was convicted of, although she could get a year for each of those. The thought is that probably with the time served, she just walks away from all of this. And a lot of people are reacting, more importantly, not to that, but to the acquittal. And what does that mean? What does it speak to when it comes to circumstantial evidence? Clint David has been on the show before. We think he's fabulous. He's a Dallas-based attorney. Always has an opinion on things legal and otherwise, too. But, Clint, thanks so much, as always, for coming on ATN.
Kate, it's great to be back with you. Appreciate it.
At your first initial reaction when you heard about the Casey Anthony verdict?
I'll be honest with you. I absolutely flipped out. I was in complete shock. I've only been practicing law for 31 years, so I guess I'm always willing to learn something new. But I just was sure, after a 33-day trial and deliberations under 11 hours, no notes were taken, the jury absolutely was going to come back, find her guilty of murder in the first degree. I thought that's what the evidence showed, was absolutely certain that that's what they were going to find. When I heard the verdict, I just, my jaw dropped. I was absolutely shocked, like most of the planet.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. The prosecutor who tried this, a guy named Jeff Ashton, has been a lawyer for 30-some years, and I guess he's retiring. I've certainly dealt with a lot of attorneys and seen reactions in courtrooms, and you know this about verdicts of all kinds, but I don't know that I've ever seen anyone react that way. And people like, people connected to the O.J. Simpson trial, like Marsha Clark, is saying she thinks that this was worse than the shock of the O.J. Simpson
right.
verdict from her point of view. And so now he decides to step away. What happened with the prosecution? Did everything kind of just fall apart for them, where they thought they had it shored up?
Well, I will tell you this. I mean, all the talking heads, everybody that you heard after final arguments by the prosecution were praising them. You know, strong, vibrant, great job. The defense throwing up a bunch of smoke screens, throwing spaghetti against the wall, see what sticks. And now all of a sudden they're second-guessing everything. I believe they put on a strong case. Now, some are saying that maybe they overreached, that they, you know, they went for the top rung of the ladder, murder in the first degree. And they tried to convince that jury with the chloroform and the duct tape. And if the jury did not buy that, if the jury was not convinced of those things beyond a reasonable doubt, we can talk about that in a second because that's really important, then their whole case fell apart. Some say they reached too high, that they should have gone for an aggravated case or an aggravated manslaughter and tried to prove up a lesser included offense. But they didn't. They shot for the stars and they missed. And I mean, Kate, the jury poured them out on the street. I mean, they got slaughtered. This was not even a close verdict. When they came back that quickly, nobody was buying what that prosecutor was selling.
Yeah, no kidding. And now everybody's trying to find out what's going on with the jury. And the jury, sometimes you know this, they'll talk to the media. They look like they were going to do that, but then forget about it. They didn't do that initially because sometimes you can get a lot of jurors and figure out, well, what was it and what happened in that room when they – as they were sequestered and listening to everything and then, of course, coming up with a verdict that they came up with. I think that you're right. We said they just weren't buying what they were selling. Was that a smart move? I'm just curious. From the juror's perspective, not to say anything because they'll get bombarded since so many people in the court of public opinion are just beyond themselves upset over this verdict?
I think so. I think that when you're sequestered for over a month, I really think the fact they took no notes – And look, there was a 20-page just the jury charge. How they could have gone through all the evidence, all the counts, the jury charge in such a limited period of time tells me they wanted out of there. And after that verdict, they wanted to go home. They want to go back to their lives. They don't want to talk about this thing anymore. You know, if beyond a reasonable doubt, and I mentioned that a minute ago, it was so critical. Everybody hears that. That is a very high standard of proof. If you sue somebody in a civil court, it's called by preponderance of the evidence, meaning if you're the plaintiff, all it's got to be is a 51-49 tilt of the scales and you win. A criminal standard of proof burdened by the prosecutor is beyond a reasonable doubt, meaning if you as a juror have any doubt that's reasonable, you must acquit. If you're pretty sure she did it, you've got to acquit. If you're darn sure she did it, you've got to acquit. You must have absolutely no doubt in your mind that there is guilt. Otherwise, you are instructed to acquit. And they just – I still don't – I think they proved all the elements beyond a reasonable doubt. It was circumstantial evidence, no smoking gun, no DNA, no connection of Casey Anthony to the body. The jury had to connect all of the dots. You know, the trunk smell, the parents' reaction. I mean, my goodness gracious, what else does the jury need to see? I mean, it's like, OJ, I guess you need a videotape.
Mm-hmm.
But this was tough. You know, Scott Peterson was circumstantial evidence.
Yeah.
They threw him away.
Yeah.
I don't think that jury wanted to believe. You got seven women, five men, that a young, attractive woman like this would kill her child. I just don't think they wanted to believe that.
Yeah, I had a caller that said that she's an attractive lady and she loves her child. You could tell from the photographs. And so perhaps that's exactly what you said. Perhaps that's what they were thinking. And that'd be pretty tough. How do you go beyond that? You know, they had 400 pieces of evidence. You just brought it up, the trunk, et cetera. And it was circumstantial. I love the analogy of the Scott Peterson case as he killed his wife, Lacey, and they threw the book at him.
Deal. They threw that boy away and locked him up and threw away the key.
Yeah, crazy. And what does this say about circumstantial cases? I mean, maybe other prosecutors, you know, they got to do their job, of course, and can't worry about other verdicts. But this was such a giant case. Maybe it gives pause to somebody who has any similarities to this.
I think it might give pause as to when you've got such a circumstantial evidence case, and that the one juror who, you know, the alternate, said, look, we didn't see a motive. There was no cause of death, no body. You know, we just didn't think it was proved. I think that what prosecutors might take away from this is, look, when we have a purely circumstantial evidence case, maybe we need to try to prove a lesser included offense. Because if you shoot high and miss, your case collapses. This was a death case, and I just don't think this jury wanted to hear any of it. But how they returned so quickly tells me, Kate, they all said, hey, what do you think? Nah, I don't think they approved it. Let's go home. I mean, it almost seems that simplistic to me. They should have stayed to really go through the evidence and the jury charge on each and every count. I think she, I mean, look, one man's personal opinion, I think she got away with murder. Let's remember the jury didn't hear everything that we've heard, but
right.
I think the prosecution did the best they could with what they had. Maybe they overcharged. The defense, I thought, was somewhat of a joke.
Yep.
You know, all these theories of abuse, and they just absolutely tried to throw up every smoke screen they could. I think that the prosecution lost. I don't think the defense won.
Yeah, I agree with you. However, for other people who look at this, especially somebody in Orlando, they're in this situation. Jose Baez, he was the guy who was the defense, like you said, throwing up all kinds of things about the pool and she drowns and all this other stuff. He could still end up getting a boatload of clients, I think.
Oh, my goodness gracious. This is a kingmaker deal for him. I mean, this is the biggest thing since OJ. I mean, you know, they were having that champagne party, and one of the lawyers was jumping up and down for joy. And I just felt that was, you know, he says there's no winners. Well, it sure looked like there were winners when they were having their little champagne jamboree.
Yeah.
I found that to be unprofessional. You've got a dead daughter here. Look, the parents of Casey Anthony, wouldn't you or I, if our child just got acquitted and narrowly saved her skin, wouldn't we run up, embrace her? Oh,
yes.
My goodness, darling, your life is saved. By the way, let's now go find who killed our granddaughter,
right.
Your daughter.
Right.
They walked out. Everybody knows what happened here. This young woman is a classic sociopath, and she is going to have the life. Look, she's going to make a lot of money. She'll be in jail again. She can't run. She can't hide. It's like OJ. She's been convicted in the court of public opinion, just not in the courtroom.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow. And as you said, it should probably make a lot of money and then eventually end up in some other kind of circumstance, just like O.J. Simpson, who eventually got his comeuppance. And the sad thing is, Clint, you also said this, Kaylee, no justice for her, the beautiful 2-year-old girl.
No, and that's just so unbelievably tragic here that it worked. And I've heard also that Casey said that the first thing that she wants to do is she'd like to have another baby, which the thought of that, yeah, is just chilling. Heard that on national television today. And, you know, maybe wants a do-over, be a mother again. Who knows? But she'll end up being a celebrity. I hope anyone listening doesn't give her a book deal, doesn't buy her whatever it is she's selling that people do not participate in. For someone to capitalize on this, I understand the parents are considering a book deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people will capitalize on this. The networks, everyone, and really what you have is a dead, gorgeous little 2-year-old girl, innocent victim. It's just tragic all the way around.
Yep.
The food storage industry leader has done it again.
Introducing FDG Clubs and Survival Bucks from the Freeze Dry Guy. For over 39 years, the Freeze Dry Guy has served various government agencies and the private sector with the finest in storable foods and emergency rations. If you've wanted to build emergency food supplies but couldn't afford it,
now you can.
Go to freezedryguy.com, click on products, and look for the Freeze Dry Guy Clubs to pay as you go.
Now you can build food storage without going into debt.
Choose from a payment range of $95 to $450 per month.
Our clubs work with everyone's budget.
Plus, when you join Freeze Dry Guy Clubs, you'll get additional rewards. For example, this month, get 10% back in survival bucks on all purchases in the Freeze Dry Guy product line, plus free shipping within the lower 48 states on any order amount. Hurry, go to freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. The Freeze Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Do you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt? Behind on your payments or barely making minimums? Massive interest payments have you running like mad in circles. How long can you keep it up? Stop running. Let the Thomason Law Group carefully plan your escape. We're one of only a few remaining debt relief companies to survive massive government crackdowns. Why? Because the Thomason Law Group has proven itself, helping thousands of people like you reclaim their financial future for over 18 solid years. We have an A+ rating with the Better Business business bureau and offices in all 50 states. Our expert credentialed staff can specifically tailor-make your absolute best recovery plan. I'm a paid spokesperson, not a lawyer, and every case is different. But if you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, call the Thomas & Law Group now for a free no-obligation consult with a trained legal analyst. 1-800-756-3744. Call now because you're tired of running. 800-756-3744. 800-756-3744.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, CrossbreedHolsters.com.
235 years ago, our forefathers signed the Declaration of Independence to escape tyranny and oppression. Today, there is a need to reinforce that declaration. What can we do to protect our health as a nation and in our homes from those who wish to control the quality of our air and water? To find out, you need to visit airandaqua.com right now or call 612-767-2777. You will receive a free copy of our Constitution, a newsletter, and bonus items. Air and Aqua.com. Purify your life today.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
My name's John. I've been having problems with my blood pressure for years. My doctor's tried everything without much success. I heard about Extendovite from a friend and thought, why not give it a try? It's been 3 months now. My doctor's very pleased with how my blood pressure's finally coming down. I have a lot more energy than I've had in a long time. It's working for me.
For 12 years now, I've been helping people. My name is Don Wiskin, and I want you to know Extendovite works. If you're looking for more energy, or just want to be as healthy as you can, now is the time to join the growing list of real people benefiting from Extendovite. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Whoa, you know, you must have been a beautiful baby. You must have been a beautiful child.
Back to America Tonight. We've had him on several times. Always a delight to welcome David Morey back on the show with us. I mean, he is the strategic guru. Let's just call him that. Because if we did his resume, it would take up all 4, actually, hours of the show. I'll give you just a little bit. He's the vice chairman of Core Strategic Group. He's the founder and CEO of DMG. He has been an advisor in just politics in general to a lot of different people, certainly with the Democrats. You could look at Russian President Boris Yeltsin. I just found out that recently. Even Mexican President Vicente Fox. I bet there were some interesting conversations. And here he is on America Tonight. Hey, David, how are you?
Kate, it's great to be with you.
All right, I got to ask you this question before we dive into a bunch of other stuff that relating to politics in America. But what was Boris Yeltsin like? What was he like to deal with?
Well, he was complicated. He had his own personal habits that made it all interesting. And we helped he and his entire delegation come into town and, create a stronger relationship with the United States, which at the time was very critical. We also gave some advice in their early democratization. You know, even Russia moving from communism to democracy, you know, some of the strategies we've learned from great people smarter than us, you know, applied in those situations. So it was a fascinating cultural experience, and he was a piece of work, I'll tell you. But he was courageous. I mean, he, you know, got up on that tank at a key moment in history, right?
Yeah. Since you were there in the beginning, how far do you think Russia has come now at this point, all these many years later?
Well, I mean, in some ways it's come further than anybody could have anticipated, and in some ways it has remarkable challenges ahead. I think the gap between the rich and the poor is wider in Russia than, in third world countries. So it's got that sort of strange sort of, you know, kind of mafiosa type culture. Yet on the other hand, it has democratic values and it's starting to get closer and closer to real democracy. It's as messy as real democracy in the way that we all know it here in America.
Yeah, speaking of messy, what's getting interesting, I think, with the Republicans, we'll start there, is I don't know how to describe it. It's sort of like everybody's throwing in. There's game pieces, and different pieces are starting to move around the board. Michelle Bachmann scores some big points, not just with the Tea Party, but with some others in New Hampshire, and certainly some of the other things that she's had to say and do, and she brings in a heavy hitter campaign-wise with Rollins helping her out. How far do you give? Because a lot of people ask me this question on the air, and you know this because that's what you do. You're about strategy. Is she doing the right thing, and do you give her a chance to be there in the end?
Yeah, I wouldn't underestimate her. It's hard to imagine Michelle Bachmann becoming the nominee. And Ed is very, very smart. He hasn't won lately, but he's really smart, and he's a good strategist. And he did a good job with Ronald Reagan, for sure. I mean, so I think I'm impressed with how well she's prepared herself. You know, she's done all the things that you need to do. And she's, you know, the problem I think people have is that we have a saying in one of our chapters of our book, The Underdog Advantage, called Everything Communicates. When you start really messing up some fundamentals of history, and she shares that with Sarah Palin, you know, it just sort of discredits the whole argument a little bit. But I'm not sure for the base, and particularly the Tea Party activists, it's a two-party system, the Republican Party, right? Yeah. I mean, she really excites these people and gets them really moving. So it's starting to look, I mean, you know, it's a little early to say this, like it's a two-person race, Romney versus Bachmann. And unless Rick Perry comes in and shakes it up and something happens, it's hard for me to imagine Romney doesn't win the nomination right now. You know, although it's a long road to Tipperary, right? We're a long way away from primaries. But Romney has a pretty formidable lead, and it looks like it'll come down to a two-person race, you know, coming out of New Hampshire, going into some of the southern states.
Yeah. And then if Romney does get it, and you're there and you have to figure out, I call it the undercard, you have to figure out who's going to be the VP on that ticket, what would you look for?
Well, Romney, you know, it's interesting. I mean, he can't choose Huntsman, right? I mean, because that would be religiously incorrect and unbalanced. You know, Pawlenty, you know, we all thought until he sort of it's funny how politics works today. He gives one bad answer and he's out of the race. I mean, you know, in a debate that nobody watched, by the way. I mean, it's amazing how this stuff has to come out just perfectly in the starting gate. It's like trying to win the Triple Crown here. You can't have one false step in these presidential campaigns, which, by the way, Romney is, as Bill Clinton said this week, he's a much better candidate than he was 4 years ago. He's got a much better answer to the health care question that he'll be dogged, you know, throughout the campaign. So, I mean, I think that, you know, it's going to be, if you had to bet on a Romney running mate, you know, Michelle Bachmann wouldn't be out of the question. I mean, that would sort of, you know, be interesting, I think.
Sure, sure.
You know, I mean, Marco Rubio, I think, would be ideal, you know, because it would bring Florida into play. But he said about 8,000 different ways, I don't want to be vice presidential nominee. On the other hand, you know, people always say that, you know, especially when they're running themselves. And then things change when it all happens. And I had a dinner last week with President Obama and then went out to a smaller fundraising with those folks. And I just wouldn't I wouldn't discount Romney's ability to beat the president. I mean, I think depending on the economic reality, I don't think this is anything close to a shoo-in. I think, you know, the American people are really hurting. I think the White House and the campaign team behind President Obama know that. But it's not a cakewalk, it seems to me. I mean, you know, there are challenges. And on the one hand, the president is, you know, one of the great thoroughbred politicians that I've ever worked with and seen. On the other hand, you know, he has some challenges in terms of the economy and the sense that, you know, he's distanced himself from the American people. He's not connected up emotionally with the American people. And, you know, they're going to be pounding him on health care. They're going to be pounding him on the deficit issue. And if the deficit, the debt talks crash, you know, it's not clear that one party versus another will be blamed. It's likely that both parties will be blamed. And I don't know that that helps the president, you know, given his ultimate leadership responsibility. So I think there are big challenges here. I would not go to sleep leading into this next November election. I think it could be closer than people believe.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, you meet with the president, you talk to people around him, you go to the fundraiser, and do you emphasize that? I mean, you're there and you're the strategic arm, and you got to make sure that the people in the room realize this isn't a layup. Is that part of what your message would be?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And look, on the one hand, the president has the advantage of not having to campaign and, you know, raising $1 billion, perhaps. But on the other hand, you know, it's that Mario Cuomo quote, you know, campaigning is poetry, governing is prose. You know, he's into the prose phase here. You know, there's nothing that signifies prose more than having to sit down with Mitch McConnell, right, and negotiate a budget deal, you know, or with John Bonner. So, I mean, I think, you know, he's necessarily going to look like he's mucked up in a dysfunctional political system. You know, most Americans believe what's obviously true. We're having a hard time solving our own problems with our political system. You know, the political will, you know, the president said something very interesting, you know, last week at this event. He said, you know, we can all pull out our napkins, everyone from every party and all the leadership, and we all have the same mathematics. They all have the same arithmetic, but they don't have the same political will. So, you know, what's really happening here is the political will isn't lining up the way it should in terms of getting problems solved. And that is distressing, as it should be, for the American people. You know, we're trying to solve our own problems and balance our own checkbooks, and we would ask the same of our leaders.
Yeah, absolutely. The president did something that we've already talked about here in America Tonight. He did the first Twitter town hall. Smart move, right, to try to rally those younger people, because they're on Twitter. That's the communication device. That's where people are looking, social media. This was a probably a smooth move, or what do you think?
100%. Very smart. I mean, I think you know, I was watching some of the commentary and some of the, you know, Twitter advocates. You know, I'm a light Twitter user, but some of the people that live and breathe on Twitter wanted more interaction, you know, so, okay, maybe they do that next round. I mean, it shows, I don't know if you watched it, but he is really, really formidable, you know, in those kinds of venues. And it does, you know, it does remind us how great a candidate he is, how strong a communicator is, even though he, you know, he doesn't connect up as much as perhaps he'd like to with the American people. It's a challenge for him. I think he's so smart. You know, he's got so much information. You know, I think that the campaign will find him more and more connecting up emotionally to the American people, because he's going to have to do that to win the election. You know, we want our presidents to sort of connect up, to relate to us emotionally. That, I think, you'll see more and more. It's hard to do that with the Twitter, you know, town hall format that they organized. It was much more about intellectual answers to tough questions. But still, I thought it was extremely effective, and you know, he's got a lot of youth behind him right now.
Yeah, no kidding. We only have a minute left, but and this is kind of a big one for you, but I'll just throw it out there. A lot of people talk about the third party. I've even thought about that before. There's people that are disillusioned. Think we'll ever have that third party? Well, you and I are alive anyway.
I do. You know, there's never been a greater desire for it, you know, because there's greater dissatisfaction of both parties than at any point in modern history. And so, you know, I think there's an opening there, but no one's jumped into it. Mike Bloomberg, I think, could have. You know, Ross Perot, who was crazy, got 19% of the vote. So can you imagine if someone is sane and they run as a third-party candidate with a lot of their own money? That could be interesting.
Yeah, that could be interesting. And that's why I think if we continue to go down that path, and like you're saying, the political will, it kind of opens up that lane that just maybe something happens there. You never know. All right, the book is called The Underdog Advantage. David Morey, always great to have you on America Tonight. It's fun to pick your brain, and hopefully we'll do that again down the road as we get closer to, you know, shoring up what happens with the Republicans and seeing where the president is, and continued success with your magic, my friend.
GCN listeners, why have you been hearing so much about Dermatol, the all-natural, all-purpose first aid spray? Because it's the must-have first aid product you need in your preparedness kit. Dermatol is made in America by Americans who know there's a more affordable, natural way to treat cuts, burns, bites, rashes, shingles, boils, and many other skin problems. Dermatol is gentle enough for diaper rash, powerful enough for bed sores, and harmless to the eyes and mouth. It's great for the whole family, even your family pets. Dermatol is antimicrobial, antifungal, antiviral, and not diminished by freezing, extreme heat, or years in storage. Dermatol is an absolute must for any first aid or preparedness kit. Dermatol's soothing, rapid restoration of injured skin is so effective, it's guaranteed. Order yours today. Call 800-217-6677. 800-217-6677. That's 800-217-6677. Efficient, economical, effective. Spray it all with Dermatol.
Hey Brian, if you could do just one thing today to ensure your family's food security, what would it be?
That's easy, Bill. I'd head straight to soupbeansurvival.com.
Soupbeansurvival.com?
I know, Bill, it sounds crazy, but this ancient secret has been around for over 8,000 years, and it truly is nature's super survival food.
Really, Brian, the number one survival food? Well, certainly the forgotten survival food.
Absolutely, Bill. The folks at soupbeansurvival.com scoured our planet to find the very best heirloom seeds, to truly find nature's super survival food.
Brian, these aren't grocery store beans, are they?
No way, Bill. You're not going to find these beans in any grocery store. These are the absolute highest quality beans in the world. Visit soupbeansurvival.com. That's soupbeansurvival.com for all the information you're going to need for nature's super survival food.
You know that drinking pure, high-alkaline water is one of the most important factors in maintaining high energy and vibrant health. And most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops, available only at AlkaVision.com, combine a unique formula of most alkaline minerals available. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops alkalize your water, ridding the body of harmful toxins and acid, helping you to regain your energy and health. Alkalizing your water by simply adding 10 drops of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops helps the body to rid itself of acidic waste, increases oxygen, and raises the pH of your body to optimal levels. And bacteria and viruses cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops for only $29.95 at AlkaVision.com. That's AlkaVision.com. Or call 269-409-1776. 269-409-1776. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health at AlkaVision.com.
In 1965, this was the sound. Come in, Sue John. One more time. One more time. One more time. Playing the scene. In a drag. Papa's got a brand new bag.
As we race to the finish line here on this Hour of America tonight with me, Kate Delaney. Let's give you a little odds and ends. One, it's about the numbers, and sadly, New Zealand hit with a quake. We're talking about some islands, a little bit different, but when you say the number 7.8 on the Richter scale, never, ever good. Of course, any number, when you say 5.6, if you were in Manhattan, that could be disastrous. But 7.8 in a New Zealand island in the Pacific, they're saying it triggered a small tsunami that had actually New Zealand bracing for some gigantic waves. And since all of us are weary of that kind of thing, thanks to what's happened in Japan back in March, the good news is that ultimately they canceled the tsunami warning and damage not that extensive from everything that I've heard so far at this point. Still pretty scary whenever you hear it. Just telling people to stay off the beaches and stay out of water until they were sure that the tsunami danger had passed. Boy, 7.8. It's a very, very remote island, a volcanic island, in fact. So not a lot of people living there, but people who certainly visit and people who were staying on the island. So to be safe, natural, you have to issue that kind of a warning. Now, this wasn't about warnings. This was about flat-out fraud. Don't know if you heard the story or not, but here's a shocker for you. You never know what goes on inside the minds of the PTA moms, right? And I actually, somebody sent me a note about it, and I thought it was a joke. It was like, knock, knock, who's there? PTA moms asking for money. And what it turns out is that there were three of these moms in Pennsylvania who used connections with an elementary school to recruit investors to jump on a phony $14 million get-rich scheme. Everybody realizes that, right? If there was a way to get rich or thin quickly, take this pill, oh, just sign up here, wouldn't we all be doing that? But what the Sheriff's Department is saying, and they broke this open last week, they're saying that the scam lasted 2 years. And for 2 years, nobody said anything, but they had an investor who complained finally. So you have two of the women who are arrested on 22 felony charges. I mean, this is serious stuff because the amount of money, grand theft, security fraud. You already got one of the women who's in jail now on grand theft charges related to some other kind of a swindle. But they had it going on. They were working it. What they did was they told investors, and this does sound good, right? They told investors they had the exclusive right to sell all the dairy stuff at Disneyland, and they just needed money to expand, that they were there, and if you jumped on, I mean, they had the right, so Disneyland doesn't get any bigger than that. But, of course, they didn't have any such thing. They didn't have the rights to anything dairy. Only in their wild imaginations. So it was an elaborate Ponzi scheme, and they actually made hundreds and thousands of dollars. Millions in the end. What did I say? $14 million. So enough people were willing to buy into this. Oh, PTA, you know, they're doing the dairy thing. It sounded good. And that's the problem. No red flags went up until somebody got cranky because they weren't getting the returns they thought they were going to get. And that blew the whole thing flat out wide open. I guarantee there are people that were floored by that, absolutely floored. All right, since we're doing the odds and ends, I've often wondered this. I don't know how many of you, because we're coming off of a holiday weekend, have ever had the pleasure of going to Yellowstone Park. You know, think of being in the bowels, I call it the bowels of some of these incredible parks we have in this country. Some of you listening to me right now live on the outskirts of some of these incredible areas. I mean, I don't think there's enough time, honestly, in anyone's life to see all the treasures we have here in the United States, unless you're incredibly wealthy and all you do is travel from place to place. Regardless, one place you want to put on your bucket list, Yellowstone. Amazing place. So a grizzly bear, which there could be grizzly bears there, and there have been attacks in the past. Sadly, a grizzly bear killed a guy who was hiking with his wife in Yellowstone. They were backpacking, and they surprised the female bear and cubs, and that's always the bad deal there. If you've got a mama and the cubs, what do? They say you're supposed to stand still, kind of hide and blend into the area you are. But if you flat out come upon them, I don't see how you can do that. And a grizzly can move pretty fast. It was the park's first time that this has happened, and a mauling that resulted in a death since the mid-80s. But the strange thing is, it's the third in just over a year. Now you got these tourists roaming around, and you have a growing number of these bears. And that's not a good thing. Why are the bears suddenly coming out more? What happened was when the guy was attacked, by the way, what do? The wife jumped on the phone, cell phone, hit 911. Other hikers could hear screams and whatnot, and they tried to help, but it was much too late. Once people started to show up, that was it. And the couple actually saw the bear twice on their hike. The first time, and this was the mistake, the first time they saw the bear, they just kept hiking. Oh, it's okay, you know, we're all right. They kept hiking. The second time, too late, the grizzly was flat out on a run toward them. And the man, what could he do? Told his wife to run. So the good thing here is, and there's nothing really good about it, so that's probably the wrong way to phrase this, But if you're looking for any kind of a silver lining, thank God the woman really didn't see the bear attack her husband, because she dropped to the ground, and the grizzly lifted her off the ground by the day pack that she had, then just dropped her. But the man jumped right head on into the path, realizing what was going to happen afterwards. So, you know, grizzlies in the Yellowstone area have, as I said, suddenly been a bigger problem for people, raiding bird feeders and what is that? That's nothing. But looking for food is what I'm assuming, and they're just getting closer. So they're trying to figure out, is it bad? Is it that change in the makeup of the land and the food and all that sort of stuff? And, you know, I'm thinking, how many grizzlies do you think, in the size of Yellowstone, how many grizzlies do you think there are out there? And the park people believe there's like 600 or so. And tourists, of course, want to see the grizzly if they can from a safe distance, but is there really ever a safe distance? And Yellowstone is so popular, like I said, on lots of people's bucket lists. 3.6 million went to Yellowstone last year, and that shot up 10%. And each year they see that number climb, no matter what the economy is. So I guess if you're going to backpack, now, how do you stay safe? I mean, you stay on the designated trails, but if the grizzlies are going to go there, that doesn't really help. Maybe bigger groups, just kind of keep an alert. And for goodness sake, if you see a bear, why wouldn't you just turn around? I wouldn't even risk that. And they actually have this spray you can use, some kind of bear spray, and it's supposed to be pretty effective in stopping them. Because that would be my question. How often do we say, are you emergency prepared on the show? Because we're always talking about Mother Nature. But what about when you, okay, so you know you're going camping, you feel confident in your skills, but there's no way. You and the grizzly, what are you going to do? You got to drop, baby. Even COP sent us a little thing here. If you go to the website, americatonight.net, you'll see me waving. And through the miracle of Pal Talk, COP is chatting with us. He says the best way to deal, this is a Jersey guy too, he says the best way to deal with a bear is to drop to the ground and play dead. Don't move. The bear will sit on you, smell your breath, get up, walk away, sit there for a while and leave. And that's right, COP. That's the same thing that I've heard too. But it's just like what they say with sharks. Be very, very still. It's so easy to say. But when you have a great white coming after you, you have a grizzly tearing down on top of you, do you think you're going to do that statue thing where you just freeze in the moment? We're putting it out there, though, because it's a sad story that this couple was hiking, and, of course, the man was killed trying to save his wife. And now you know that there's so many grizzlies, not just in Yellowstone, but in some of those other parks as well. Any thoughts on the show? You know what to do. Send them to me through the website, americatonight.net. Click on the email, and you're in.